Hi, everybody. I'm going to leave this screen up for a minute. No. Let's go back to that screen. Can we do that? Can we go back to the screen? Because those Norman Rockwell illustrations somehow offer an image of some of the best of the sixth ray personality of the United States. We don't Michael. Seem to be able to get back to it.
It's Michael Stacy's screen. Hold on. Okay. Michael, are you there? Can you share your screen again? Thanks.
Yeah. It's a wonderful. Long ago, I was to the Norman Rockwell Museum in upstate New York. And I guess he was an illustrator who was working around the time of the mid 20th century, a little bit earlier, and he really captured it, you know. These are what the normal people, you know, not the esotericists, but the normal people of the United States are meant to represent when the sixth ray is working the way it should. And you can feel the second ray in the background. These four freedoms are as much of the shambolic impulse as presently humanity in general can understand. At least that's what the Tibetan told us. And there is a sense that that somehow in the middle of the World War II and so forth, he was able to capture it. Just a moment, please. Okay, I've gotten a message that there are still some people in the waiting room that need to be brought into the main program. So please, can one of you, Michael or Michael, see to that? A message was delivered to me that is the case. Anyway, I was speaking of the four freedoms. They're usually listed in the order of and from. Freedom of speech first, freedom of worship next, freedom from want, and then finally freedom from fear. And when we are working on these new moon meditations, we are specifically thinking about the shambolic implications of the new moon, that kind of direct hit, which is like the seed. It's like the seed being planted. And we know that the first ray powers are found in the seed. Later, when the full moon occurs, we have the expansion of consciousness, and then we go back to the planting of the archetypal seed, which has to be unfolded. So I really love these illustrations. And of course, that museum is just filled with them. He is such a humanitarian. And if you look really closely, he has such an attention to detail, and he has managed to capture with a lot of subtlety the nature of the average good human being functioning, particularly at this time under the sixth ray. I just thought as long as Michael had that up, that I would point this out. Now I'll go to nothing fancy, you know, but I'll just go to a few statements about Shambhala. The actual new moon itself will be occurring at 19 and 30 and 54 seconds. So basically 7:30 p.m. and 54 seconds. And that's giving us almost another hour or so. And we'll be there in plenty of time. Just to review some of these beautiful statements about Shambhala, you know, I think the actual Shambhala compilation, which I'd like to get going on, you know, have either classes on that or some, you know, some commentary on that, about 729 or something references. It's huge. But by the time we're finished with it, we should know something about peaceful, silent will. The one of awful power breathes forth light supernal, love eternal, peaceful, silent will. So let's just be a little bit contemplative as we kind of review here a few points about Shambhala out of the 729 or so. That's a pretty close figure. From the standpoint of true esotericism, Shambhala is a place, well, we can call it a point of tension, really, of, quote, serene determination and of poised, quiescent will. It's not always released, of course. It can't be. It, along with the first ray, it represents the power that touches and then withdraws. You can't, you cannot hold that indicating finger too long in the place where it touches. Otherwise, there will be destruction. Serene determination and peaceful, silent will. Here from telepathy in the etheric vehicle, we're speaking of members of the Great White Lodge on Sirius. The recipients of this impression are the highest members of the Great Council in Shambhala, presided over by the Lord of the World, Sanat Kumara. So subtle is this impression that these great lives can only receive it with accuracy when in full joint conference of the entire council, and also after due preparation. So usually we're told that Sanat Kumara is not really along the Syrian line, and that it's more hierarchy that's along the Syrian line. But we are learning here that there is a way that the great initiator of our solar logos and actually the one who has set up the entire system of initiation on our earth does reach into Shambhala, but only under the most extraordinary circumstances. And, you know, sometimes we say, well, let's invoke Sirius, but take a look at this. In full joint conference of the entire council, that is the way it is received, and not otherwise. So who is a member of Shambhala? The Sanat Kumara, of course. He's both the first and the fourth Kumara, the holy youths, as they're called. The three Buddhas of activity, who are also members of the council, are expressions of the counterparts on cosmic levels of the energies latent in the three permanent atoms, in the three worlds of human endeavor. And anyway, there is at least a symbolic relationship. And I imagine that they represent in some way the solar permanent atoms, of which Saturn is definitely the permanent atom of the entire cosmic physical plane. And Uranus and Neptune of the cosmic mental plane and the cosmic astral plane, but they are not, they are more symbolic representatives. They are not per se the permanent atoms, and yet I'm sure they are represented by the three Buddhas of activity. What about the lives that, you know, these are very high things. And when we're talking about the divine will and accessing it, which we do need it at this time. We have to fight fire with fire. It's true with forest fires, and it's also true given the circumstances of the present Dark Brotherhood attack that is working through some of the powerful but less conscious and more egotistical members of the human family who are in leadership positions. Now, we're also talking at this point about a man, once he becomes a master, or maybe a Chohan even, which is a high state which admits you into Shambhala, but there are greater lives in Shambhala than the newly admitted Chohan, and who then are of greater advancement than the newly admitted one. The Supernal Three, who I imagine to be the three esoteric Kumaras. Some fascinating relationship between the three Buddhas, who are exoteric Kumaras relatively. There are six of them surrounding Sanat Kumara, just the way if you put down seven pennies on a table, there'll always be a central one and a hexagonal relationship around them. So the Supernal Three, the Radiant Seven, who are the Ray Lords, the lives who embody the embodying the 49 fires, and they are along the line of the Holy Spirit. We also have 49 such representatives on the line of the rays, and something peculiar called the seven spirits of darkness, which are so high that we don't usually deal with them. They're mentioned in Cosmic Fire, I think, and maybe in the rays and the initiations, but they are more coming into activity later, when the will aspect of our solar system is operative, and maybe into the next solar system. Then, of course, also in Shambhala, the Buddhas of activity and certain eternal spirits, they last a long time, I suppose, from such centers of dynamic spiritual life as Sirius, more than Sirius, such centers. And there have to be a number of these constellational systems, cosmic logoi working through them, or from the constellation which at any one time, interestingly, forms the triangle with our sun and Sirius, and maybe Procyon is one, the greater dog, the lesser dog, and our constellation, or our solar system, let's say. And a representative from Venus, our prototype, our archetype, our far greater advancement than the newly admitted Chohan. Otherwise, all initiates of the sixth degree, yes, and a few of the masters who have undergone specialized training because they work upon the first ray of willpower, the ray conditioning Shambhala itself. They form, if you're on that first ray line, you can be a master and still be a member of Shambhala. So very, very high lives. But there are other masters and Chohans who pass out of the planetary life altogether. So we can hardly fathom the nature of the lives that are found in Shambhala. And let's see. Yeah, he talks here about the mystery lying behind the Himalayas. Well, maybe in the Gobi Desert, actually. Is one of the places of what we call the normally etheric Shambhala. The real Shambhala has to do with the four cosmic ethers. But there is a reflection of that in the Gobi Desert, and it's called the White Island. So I'm just getting a very strong impression that somehow we have to find a way to study together the compilation on Shambhala in order to sharpen our understanding of the divine will. Now, I think we had a very good esoteric United Nations meeting today, quite lengthy, and we dealt with the divine will quite strongly. And with the particular emergency times through which we are passing, the powers of darkness are not yet in control. They seek to reestablish their control, because the door where evil dwells, the door to that lower point of tension on the astral plane was left ajar, and it was not sealed. It was not closed properly. It was not locked. And the Tibetan warns us, don't be like the man who swept his house free of devils, demons, lower lives, then neglected to be vigilant and came back, and they had reinfested the place, and even more of them, he was in a worse condition than he was just before the first cleaning. The DK warns us of that, and maybe that's the reason why this attack is being launched just before we have the great conclave, when the plan of the externalization of the masters will really swing into tangible activity. And we will begin to find the preparation for having masters at the five planetary inlets, the five planetary centers. And only then can we begin to talk about the actual reappearance of the Christ. So these background issues give us a sense of the august, there's a pun in that word, of the august nature of Shambhala, and how little we understand of it, and how we glibly speak of it, when in fact not even all masters of the fifth degree, only specially trained ones on the first ray, are allowed into Shambhala, or can achieve the necessary point of tension. What is a point of tension? Focused, immovable will. And we might, you know, to get a different angle on it, focused, immovable willingness. Now we'll, you know, be looking at Libra, We are just having the new moon in Libra, and Libra is the royal road to Shambhala, connecting the base center of will with the highest head center of purpose. So Libra in some ways represents that Shushumna, the central channel, connecting those two centers. And as I said earlier this afternoon, this is where peace actually reigns. And if the Christ is going to bring an era of peace wherein the lower definition of Satan, you know, meaning the personality, is bound for 1,000 years, a symbolic figure, then we will have to ascribe to the highest meaning of Libra, which contributes through the expiation of karma to the sharing of shambolic peace in the lower worlds. So just, you know, a little bit of background, and I think we can begin our new moon meditation. I guess, you know, we don't realize what a powerful first-rate planet we actually live on, because we're so preoccupied with the intelligence and the emerging love aspect. But the time will come when the base of the spine function, toward the end of this solar system, I would guess, really emerges on our planet. And even now, for that we prepare, and those moments of high impress of shambolic energy can be found at the new moons, and especially when there is an eclipse. Now, I don't think we have an eclipse, a new moon eclipse right now. I don't think so. But when we do, when we have the new moon and an eclipse, then we have a really powerful jolt of will energy. So, and we'll, you know, I'll try to give us as much silence along the way as possible. We have a little quiet and the sense of all 60 of us or something gathering together in the silence. And no matter where we may be geographically, we feel what we might call the emerging of synthesis, there will come a time when in the seventh round, whichever round that may be in our chain, or maybe in the whole planetary scheme, scheme round, when the moon will get smaller and smaller and smaller, disintegrating, and what will be left is the full sun upon the earth at eclipse time, what used to be eclipse time, and the obstruction of the moon will be gone. It's almost as if at a new moon, the destructive energies of the sun, of the solar logos, work to reduce the influence of the moon until there's just nothing left. That day will come. So let us have the will to purify, just the way the sun would somehow work for the destruction of the obstructive moon at the new moon. When you start planting the archetypal seeds, the moon will just fall apart. So a purified physical body, because there will be a pranically purified etheric body, with Maya banished, organized, we might say, made rhythmic, chaos reduced, and a deglamorized astral body, and a sensitized, illumined mental body, whose rigidity is overcome, rigid illusions overcome. Until the higher, the personality itself is purified and rendered no longer the dweller, but an ally of the angel of the presence, represented by the sun. Until within us there is born and cultivated the individual Christ. Christ in you, the hope of glory, the hope of transfiguration, the hope that the sun of righteousness will shine more luminously than any other factor in the individual microcosmic system. Let's anticipate that transfiguration, which will be our glorification. And the full glory will occur when the moon actually physically disintegrates. So we withdraw our consciousness. We are the, at this time, the soul in incarnation. We withdraw our consciousness from the personality, the hopefully purifying personality, but we don't identify with it. It's our instrument. And it's as if this consciousness immersed in the personality is retracted back higher into the angel of the presence. Until we find ourselves beyond words, but in actuality, within the field of light, love, and power. It's as if we find ourselves at a new point of tension, which is not any of the personality points of tension. Instead of thinking about, I'm going up a plane, up another plane, up another plane, let us think about something more realistic in energy terms. Let us think about the intensification of the point of tension of our consciousness. The intensification of the point of tension of our consciousness. Until we are standing or focusing in the field at a point of tension which reveals the light of the soul, the love of the soul, the sacrificial will of the soul, the sense of synthesis of the soul, and the powers of the jewel extended from the monad. All extracted and placed in that pool of collected energies around the mental unit where we launch the projection of the Antikarana. So we're merging with the men and women of goodwill. We're merging with the members of the new group of world servers. We're imaginatively merging with our soul groups, our egoic groups. And it's like we're in a totally different world than our normal, than then revealed by our normal personality points of tension. The soul is a great reality, group conscious, and we begin to get that very unitive sense found in rules 5 and 9, naught is but me. There is no my soul or thy soul, only the soul, the consciousness. Naught is but me. And as the many-colored Antikorana rises from the astral body through the pool of retained soul energies around the mental unit and as if into the triad, reaching towards the permanent atoms of the triad, we project through the basic indigo color we're using as a group, that rapier line of light that will ascend ever higher and call forth a response, even eventually from the shambolic part of us, which is the monad. So, we will project into the worlds revealed by still higher points of tension, and we will sound the word of power inwardly. I see the greatest light. We'll use the word of power of the great synthetic ray of our solar system, second ray, and sound outwardly the Om 3 times. I see the greatest light. It's an invocation, and response will come. And the greater lights will descend to the point we have reached, and illumination will break forth, and we will come closer and closer to the higher subplanes in the triad. But it will take time. So we as a group, we can be imagined as the recipients of hierarchical energy, because the spiritual hierarchy focuses naturally within the triad. And we can become true representatives of hierarchy. And eventually the unfettered enlightenment of Shambhala through the monad will also descend. And from whence does it descend? Let us imagine the Shambhalic world described by the Tibetan in Dina Chu in the following ways. This is what we expect will in some way reach us as we project along the bridge of light. Shambhala. It is a world of pure energy, of light, and of directed force. It can be seen as streams and centers of force, all forming a pattern of consummate beauty. Obviously, the greatest of the archetypal patterns on the cosmic physical plane. All forming a pattern of consummate beauty. All potently invocative of the world of the soul and of the world of phenomena. It therefore constitutes, in a very real sense, the world of causes and of initiation. Because, of course, the one initiator descends from Shambhala from the time of the first solar initiation, the glorification, the transfiguration. And so, though it is for us an unreachable world, it can be invoked. And we can become, as a group, recipients in some attenuated manner of the unfettered enlightenment of Shambhala, the home of divine purpose, and the center where the will of God is known. So, reaching into the heights by intensifying our point of tension, the point of tension of the group consciousness, even more important. So let us ponder for a moment along the first fray line as the personality represented by the moon is impressed and eventually disintegrated. Let us ponder on situations within the world which have to do with politics, religion, and economics. Which must be impressed and changed by the divine purpose, working lovingly and intelligently through the divine plan. We'll ponder on first ray impression in these troubled fields, troubled at the moment, and seek to see the improvement as the light is released. And we note that the three rays of aspect and their subsidiaries are represented. Politics, 1 and 7. Religion, 2 and 6. And economics, 3 and 7 and 5. All brought into harmony by the fourth ray. This is where our work has to be done, to prepare for the reappearance of the Christ. He does not dare to show himself, so great is his power, until corrections are made according to the divine purpose and will in these areas of the three great lords, Manu, Bodhisattva, Mahachohan. So let the group be as open as possible to the energy of divine purpose, working through divine plan, and pondering, let us think of ways in which you individually, the microcosm, and your group or groups, your nations, can aid esoterically in the expression of the divine purpose through the divine plan, all driven by the divine will. Let us ponder. And as we prepare for our moments of silence at the time of the new moon, which is just about 6 minutes away, in our minds, let the Lords of Liberation issue forth. Let them bring succor to the sons of men. Let the rider from the secret place come forth and coming save. Come forth, O Mighty One. Let the souls of men awaken to the light and may they stand with masked intent. Let the fiat of the Lord go forth. The end of woe has come. Come forth, O Mighty One. The hour of service of the saving force has now arrived. Let it be spread abroad, O Mighty One. Let light and love and power and death fulfill the purpose of the coming one. The will to save is here. The love to carry forth the work is widely spread abroad. The active aid of all who know the truth is also here. Come forth, O Mighty One, and blend these three. Construct a great defending wall. The rule of evil now must end. So we will go into the silence, and when the moment comes, I will sound the Om, and let us receive as we can the higher points of tension into the point of tension that we are aspiring towards. It can't be the very highest, it's not possible. But higher and higher we aspire. And the greater points of tension can make their way into the points of tension that we achieve. So, silence. So let us carry this impress of the higher points of tension, of the peaceful, silent will of Shambhala, the monad, reaching towards the point of tension we presently occupy at this strong time of impression. And let us see to it that the personality is purified. And of course, the day will come when, like the moon, it disappears, except to be remade on the archetypal image of the heights. Now, I'm not going to have any discussion. We're simply going to sound the great invocation and continue to ponder and work with the impression that can reach us at this time when the peace of Shambhala can make its impact upon humanity. So please turn off your microphones or whatever is going on there. And we'll just stay with the impression. This will be available to you on Makara. And let the seed be planted, the shambolic seed be planted, leading to the peace eventually of Shambhala. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.